In the May 1991 issue of The Atlantic, poet Dana Gioia wrote, "American poetry now belongs to a subculture. No longer part of the mainstream of artistic and intellectual life, it has become the specialized occupation of a relatively small and isolated group. Little of the frenetic activity it generates ever reaches outside that closed group. As a class, poets are not without cultural status. Like priests in a town of agnostics, they still command a certain residual prestige. But as individual artists, they are almost invisible." Close quote. You're listening to Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast, The After Dinner Scholar, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Not only do we Americans not know our contemporary poets, we don't read the poets of the past either. Poems are, for many of us, opaque. We simply don't understand, nor do we take the time to learn to understand, to appreciate, and to love poetry. With that in mind, Wyoming Catholic College President Dr. Glenn Arbery has been on a mission, the revival of poetry. The college now offers a daily video of Dr. Arbery discussing one poem a day. And I asked Dr. Arbery how the idea came about.
Well, I gave a talk in Grand Rapids at Sacred Heart Academy back in December of last year. And I was thinking a great deal about poetry for that talk, but really, I had gotten back into reading poetry pretty intensely over the course of the fall leading up to that lecture. And it's hard to say exactly why. I think I was sitting in my chair one night, I had a little time, and I looked over at my bookcase, which was literally full of books of poetry, and I realized that I hadn't read any in months, that I hadn't just picked up a book and read a poem. So I picked up Richard Wilbur's volume called Mayflies, and I read a poem, and then another one, and then another one. And it was sort of a turn back into reading poetry after a hiatus of, you know, months or even years of just, you know, voluntarily and with real pleasure reading poetry.
So what do you hope to accomplish with the vlog?
Well, I had thought after that lecture that I might like to do some sort of blog, and I hadn't imagined a video blog. I can't even pronounce V-L-O-G, vlog, I guess. But Joseph Suzaka suggested that I do these videos, these short videos, and so what I hope to accomplish is just to share various poems with people, and I don't have a program. You know, it's not a thought-out educational program of how to read poetry so much as it is just individual poems that strike me and seem worth talking about. Different emotions, different insights, images, and they, you know, go for a range of different kinds of poets. Some of them modernist and very minimal, and others, particularly traditional sonnet, that kind of poem has come up a good deal in the course of what I've done so far.
Which poems have you done?
Well, you know, gosh, it's up to I think over two dozen now.
So wow.
I don't remember all of them. The first one I did was a Wordsworth sonnet that begins, "Nuns fret not at their convent's narrow room," and it's about how being limited in space doesn't necessarily limit the imagination or the power of contemplation. And he's really writing about the sonnet form itself, but it seems so appropriate for all of us who are in quarantine, you know, who are hermits voluntarily or not, that it seemed a good place to start. That is, thinking about the confinements of poetic form and what you can do within those limits. So I've done a number of Wordsworth's poems. I've done Gerard Manley Hopkins, George Herbert, Ezra Pound, who is a, you know, early 20th century poet of considerable controversy, because, you know, he was not a good citizen, I'll put it that way. William Carlos Williams, doctor in New Jersey, who wrote Little Images poems. But then, you know, others like W.H. Auden, contemporary named Catherine Savage Brosman, who's still publishing, just had a poem in Modern Age. So it's been a range of things.
Now, tell us about your love for poetry. Is that something that you had since you were a kid, or is it something that developed over time?
Well, my family had this book, as I'm sure many families did, of, you know, best-loved American poems. And I did love to read those when I was a child. There were some by, you know, James Russell Lowell and, you know, old poems from the 19th century. John Greenleaf Whittier, everybody had three names in the 19th century. But I, you know, I read those when I was a kid, but I didn't have a, you know, steady lifelong love of poetry. It was really awakened in me when I got to college and I had some very good teachers and I started writing some myself, and that's sort of where it began. And it's ebbed and flowed, you know, since then.
Now, our Wyoming Catholic College students memorize a great deal of poetry. How important is memorization in getting to know poetry?
I think it's pretty crucial. Whether you do it deliberately or not, I think some poems stay in your memory. I've discovered when I was teaching Keats that I had memorized, without ever intending to, the whole of the Ode to a Nightingale, which is pretty long. It must be close to 120 lines or so. Never set out to memorize it, but it just, I realized I could recite the whole thing, which I won't do now. Same thing with W.B. Yeats's Sailing to Byzantium. I found that I knew the whole thing by heart. But deliberate memorization is something that a student can draw on later when they have this poem in their imaginations and they, when they go back to it and begin to recite it and think through it, they discover new connections in the language that I think are going to adapt to where they are in their own lives and what kinds of perceptions they have at the moment. It's really something to have poems by heart. It gives you a language for things and a sort of recognition when certain events happen in your life and you already have the language for it.
Now, what would you recommend to those who want to read poetry? The people who think to themselves, well, you know, I've never done this, but it's always seemed a little opaque to me, but yeah, what should they do?
Well, I think first thing to do is just pick up an anthology and start reading some poems. Some will remain opaque. There are some poems that are just, you're just going to bounce right off of, but others are not. And I think that's the first thing to see, is that these are not written to obscure an idea, but to give the best language sometimes to an emotion, to some fleeting insight, make it permanent. I think taking away some of the anxiety of reading is the first thing to set about. It's just, you know, it's not a riddle, it's not a puzzle, you know, it's a way to try to say in a memorable and revealing way something that's close to the heart.
I know one of the things that threw me off for a long time in trying to read poetry is I didn't realize that you didn't stop at the end of every line. Or you only stop at the end of every line if there is a punctuation mark at the end of the line. Otherwise, you just keep going.
Right.
And that was news to me.
I know. Why is it written that way anyway, right? Right. So, yeah, just, and you know, and if you're serious about reading poetry, and particularly traditional poetry, there are books that are extremely helpful. There's one by a man named Paul Fussell. It's spelled like Russell and pronounced that way. Paul Fussell has a book called Poetic Meter and Poetic Form, which sounds bristlingly opaque already, but it's not. It's very lucid. He's a wonderful writer, and he makes you understand traditional poetic forms better than anybody else I've ever read.
Now, what about teaching children to love poetry? How do you teach your kids or your grandkids?
Well, I think you probably don't say, now we're going to make you love poetry. I think the ear for poetry is innate. I think it's like kids love poetry. My grandkids, I make up limericks about them and recite them, and they, it turns out, have memorized them, you know, without my ever intending them to. They just love it. They love the sound of it. They love the playfulness of language and poetry. So I think the real question is how not to kill that, because I think they have it as most peoples of the world have always had it. They love songs. They love poems. Tolkien is awfully good on this. You know, he assumes that people love poetry and think in ways that elevate language. So I think it's natural to children as well.
I remember in first grade memorizing a poem called The Wind. Who wrote The Wind? I saw you toss the kites on high and blow the clouds across the sky.
I don't know.
19th century poet.
Yeah.
And I realized we memorized this in first grade.
Yeah.
And some of the lines in that poem still stick.
Yeah. I mean, once you have it, you know, have a poem by heart, it stays there. You know, Frost stopping by woods on a snowy evening. We must have memorized in third grade. And that's one of those poems that that our students memorize, mm-hmm. because it continues to open its meanings up the longer you think about it. And that's true of great poems, I think. They have a simplicity, but also depths that continue to be revealed as you think through them.
Good. Well, are you going to be continuing to do this vlog?
I'm going to do it at least through mid-May, and then I'll probably go to a couple of times a week. We'll see. All right. But I've enjoyed doing it.
Dr. Arbery's video podcast, his vlog, can be found at our website, wyomingcatholic.edu. You can also find out more information about our Adult Week, the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, here in Lander, August 9th to 14th. We'll be studying beauty as truth, science, and the Catholic imagination. But don't be fooled into thinking that the week will lack poetry. In our discussion of science, we will read poetry and plan, in fact, to memorize at least one poem as a group. If you'd like to be part of that conversation here in Lander, go to the college website for more information about the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, August 9th to 14th. We'd love to see you. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tunkowicz.